Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. 8:08 on this Sunday morning. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. And I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. More Trump news. Donald has done a 180 on his calls for killing terrorist family members and torture beyond waterboarding. And he says he wouldn't order troops to commit war crimes. Now, of course, this is one of several flip-flops by Trump, and so much so that on Jimmy Kimmel's show, Matthew Broderick and Nathan Lane reprised their roles from the show The Producers. And the idea was to come up with the worst presidential candidate in history while they sold ambassadorships to France. Here's a bit of that Jimmy Kimmel show.
Just in time for the election, it's a story that starts off funny and then gets really, really depressing.
We needed a chump to put on the stump. A frumpy, grumpy, jumpy named Donald J. Trump. He's building a wall 1,000 feet tall. Don't worry, 'cause the Mexicans will pay for it all.
From the producers of The Producers comes the movie that'll make America great again. Nathan Lane, Matthew Broderick, and Cloris Leachman star in
You've Been Trumped.
Trumped.
Maybe he won't be such a bad president.
Bing, bing, bong, bong, bing, bing, bing.
What have we done?
That's from Jimmy Kimmel, the kind of a spoof of The Producers. Well, joining me now on the phone is Roger Ruthart, the managing editor of the Moline Dispatch in Rock Island Argus. And I wanted to have Roger on to basically, I'm curious about your thoughts of the Iowa caucuses seem like they happened a year ago. And I guess that's weeks are like that in politics. But how things have changed in this campaign, even in that brief time span. Roger, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Rick.
You know, I was talking to a couple of people just the other day about how did all of us get Trump so wrong?
Well, you know, that's an interesting, I guess as many people as there are Trump supporters, you might get different answers for that one. But, you know, those of us out here who saw the campaign unfold over, I guess, probably a couple months, we became sort of numb to it all, I think, and maybe that's part of the explanation. Is you just it's just so crazy you don't really believe it.
Well, I mean I think it is interesting that Republicans are at kind of a point here of what is a Republican and what does it mean. And you hear various people kind of ascribe the fact that it was kind of the Karl Roves and those Republicans who helped inspire the creation of the Tea Party, and then the Tea Party found itself more as independents than necessarily establishment Republicans, and that when you kind of put that all and stir it in a pot together, what you get is a soup that's Donald Trump.
Well, I think, you know, what we've seen in some of the elections, and you kind of alluded this on your lead-in with the latest flip-flop, you know, we've seen really both parties sort of moving to the extremes for the primaries and more moderate candidates, you know, not being as electable. And then when it comes to the general election, you know, the candidates are too far to the right or too far to the left to really appeal to the middle road or the independents. And so then you have a different issue there. So then they sort of flip-flop a bit and start to slide back from the extremes to more moderate positions. And I'm not sure that might not be what we're going to see with Trump on this one. I don't know.
Well, although some people have suggested to me that if he is the nominee, that he'll have to take a more kind of overall centrist position.
Yeah, and I think he might, but I think then that opens up a lot of other questions for, you know, exactly who is this person that we're voting for? Is it Donald Trump A, Donald Trump B, or Donald Trump C? And I think there's some real concerns from the Republicans that I've talked to about, you know, when you put somebody like that at the head of the ticket, what's the impact going to be on some of the positions, you know, down the ticket? And are there concerns about losing, you know, Senate and congressional seats too?
Yeah, and of course, you know, when you look at Illinois and you look at Republican U.S. Senator Mark Kirk, who is viewed as perhaps one of the most vulnerable Republicans nationally, and people are saying, you know, is there a way to distance yourself from a Donald Trump as the nominee? Has Mark Kirk acquired enough of a record as a U.S. senator in Illinois that he can be viewed on his own without perhaps any kind of taint from Trump? And we've already seen on the Democratic side, two of the three Democrats that are vying for the Democratic nomination have each been calling on Mark Kirk to say whether he would support a Donald Trump as the nominee.
Yeah, and you know, Kirk's been pretty silent in this whole primary campaign too. And in fact, we haven't seen much of him out here in his whole time he's been in the Senate. But you know, we sort of feel like we have one senator in Dick Durbin who shows up here, and you know, we understand Kirk's position and that he's been through some health issues and stuff like that. But those are all sort of still the questions that need to be answered too, I think.
What about as far as on the Democratic side? Have they been paying attention to your neck of the woods?
A little bit more so. I mean, we've seen Tammy Duckworth out here a few times, and she's actually opened a campaign office here. Not so much on some of the other candidates, although we have done some phone interviews and things like that, but we haven't even been able to reach Kirk for that. So it's been kind of interesting. I mean, it's not unusual for us to see this happen where candidates run in the primary and figure they can just campaign in Chicago and then worry about the rest of the state if they get elected. So it's not the first time we've seen that, but it certainly, you know, doesn't endear the voters out here to Chicago candidates.
Memo to politicians: just outside Chicago is a place called Illinois. We're speaking with Roger Ruthart, managing editor of the Moline Dispatch, Rock Island Argus. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, and joining me on the phone is Roger Ruthart, managing editor of the Moline Dispatch in Rock Island Argus. Roger, we've got a couple of calls. Lee, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Hi, how are you?
Very good, thanks.
You know, it's sort of interesting to me, this microscope that the media puts Donald Trump under, and I'm really not even a big Trump fan. But at the same time, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton go kiss the ring of Al Sharpton, you know, the same Al Sharpton with the Freddie's Fashion Mart riots in New York that led to 8 people getting burned to death in Tawana, Raleigh. And nothing in the media said about it. But yet, if Donald Trump's got a hangnail, we're going to hear about it. I mean, do you guys really think the public is this dense?
Lee, fair enough.
The media is gutless.
Well, fair enough question. I mean, truly, and I think, Roger, you'd agree with me, and I wouldn't suggest this maybe so much as for the print media as the TV media, but that it's a catch-22 with Donald Trump. It's you have to cover him, but it also means ratings.
I think the whole Donald Trump thing almost has gone beyond politics into reality TV, and so I think they're sort of, you know, they're approaching the candidates in two different ways. I'm talking about the TV now, but you know, the other thing is that there's a lot of people that are out there that are interested in what he has to say, and I think also he's probably got all the media on speed dial and is happy to talk to him at a moment's notice too. So I mean, he knows how to play the angles. We all, I think, would give him credit for that. But there's certainly, I think, a lot of issues on both sides that are going to start coming out, including some of the things you raised, when the Democrats start talking about the Republicans and the Republicans start talking about the Democrats instead of each other.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be part of the give and take of as we kind of solidify who actually the nominees really are. We've also got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome back to the Sunday Spin.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Rick, initially you asked the question, you know, what really has happened.
since the since Iowa and New Hampshire. And as far as in the Democrat Party, you can really just look at the African-American vote that has come out. I'm hearing that it's pretty much on par with some of the same numbers that President Obama was getting. I mean, look at the endorsements from the Congressional Black Caucus. And so I think that's been one of the big differences. Another thing, Roger, you talked about how each party tends to go to the extreme in the primary. Well, I kind of disagree with it with this election. As you can see, Hillary Clinton, you can't find a more party establishment person than Hillary Clinton. And Bernie Sanders is just not getting that much traction. I think a little bit Warren probably would have gotten a little more as far as, you know, coming from the left. But I think the Democrats are really more going toward the center. She represents the center, and I think it's a totally contrast from the Republican Party, where they're just getting pulled so far to the right that they might not be able to survive. So those are my comments. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you, Ron. Yeah, Hillary is obviously the establishment candidate, but and the energy part of the Democratic Party, though, that's Bernie Sanders. Would you agree, Roger?
Yeah, no doubt. I think one of the things that Hillary's going to have to address if she does end up being the nominee, I think a lot of the young people and the independents and that backed Barack Obama, especially 8 years ago when he first ran, are you know, getting excited about Bernie Sanders now. You know, he's the candidate for change that Barack Obama was 8 years ago, and so you know, I think they're attracted to his campaign, and I think if he ends up not being the nominee, you know, then Hillary's going to have to do some bridge building to get them back in her camp.
I had someone suggest to me, even though I mentioned that Trump, I think, is an outgrowth of these kinds of sprawling divisions that have developed in the Republican Party, that what you're seeing on both sides is a result of a Barack Obama presidency, a Republican Congress, gridlock, and that that's why you have, you know, Bernie Sanders, whose appeal is to the far left, Trump and Cruz and Rubio all playing to the far right. And this is kind of a manifestation of truly the kind of the polarization of politics in Washington.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's become so difficult for third party candidates to get any traction. I mean, what was the last one we saw? Maybe Ross Perot.
Right.
You know, we had a recent court case. I guess it might change that a little bit in Illinois, but it's still a difficult thing to get going. But as the two parties move, you know, farther to the left and the right, I think it certainly leaves an opportunity for, you know, another slate to represent the people in the middle more.
Right. And I mean, Ron touched on the fact of the African-American support for Hillary Clinton, although I think percentage-wise, it's very strong. I'm not sure it's strong in the numbers. And again, that kind of energy factor. And indeed, when I was doing my profile on Andrea Zopp for her U.S. Senate bid, and one of her main supporters is William Daley, the brother and son of former Chicago mayors, former White House chief of staff. And he said that, you know, without Barack Obama on the top of the ticket, that he thought politically it was good to have an African-American woman in a kind of a high spot on the ballot to try to generate some energy. Now, of course, we'll see, you know, what the nomination may hold.
Yeah, I think anything that either party can do to get away from the old white guy syndrome is positive. I think we need broader representation of the general voting public. And, you know, certainly a younger African-American woman certainly might fit that bill.
Roger, I also want to ask you about an interesting race, the 72nd House District race going on out there, which is kind of a Democratic primary in which House Speaker Michael Madigan has identified one of the candidates that he thinks is put up by Republican Governor Bruce Rauner.
Yeah, it's a fascinating case to watch unfold. There's it started off because long-seated state rep Pat Fershore is retiring. And so what we have is four candidates that are running. One, Jeff Jacobs, is Mr. Fershore's nephew. So in the great, you know, Springfield tradition, we're going to try and keep it in the family. And he, Fershore has backed him with some TV ads and endorsements and also gave him about $50,000 out of his campaign fund. And then we have Mike Halpin, who is sort of the darling of the Democratic Party. He's worked for the party. He's got a lot of AFSCME and Chicago law firm money behind him, very little support from in the district, but a lot of mailers going out and attacking Jacobs and that sort of thing. And then we come down to, and they're both, you know, around $100,000 or more in the bank. And then we have Kate Hodel, who's a Rock Island, first-term Rock Island alderman or alderwoman. She's probably about 30 years old and has not raised much money at all. And then the fourth candidate is Glenn Evans, who is a black minister from Rock Island. And he's basically, I think, taking money out of his pocket to put in his gas tank to drive around and taking the campaign to the people going door to door that way. But really, it's two very well-funded sort of, well, they're both attorneys. So, you know, we all know we don't have enough attorneys in Springfield. So we have these two well-funded attorneys running against a 30-year-old female alderman and a minister. And for whatever reason, Mike Madigan's PAC decided to come out and attack Kate Hodel with, I think it's up to about $25,000 worth of attack mailings now. The only poll I saw in the race had her at about 10% of the vote, so I can't imagine that that was a real threat unless that 10% of the vote is needed to prop up somebody else that Mr. Madigan would like to see elected. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's got to be some kind of backstory here, and unfortunately it's probably one we won't know until after the primary election. Roger Ruthart, Managing Editor, Moline Dispatch, Rock Island Argus, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more right after this.